First item, Sue.
Item 1251, authorize a memorandum of agreement between the city and the Portland Police Association to amend the current collective bargaining agreement in effect between the city and the Portland Police Association to include the classification of public safety support specialist classification as part of the Portland Police Association collective bargaining agreement.
Thank you very much. Good afternoon, colleagues. The item before us functionally resides in the world of labor relations and would normally be presented by labor relations, who is in the room today. But I'd like to take the unusual step, given the significance of this milestone, to present the item myself. In early November, after months of negotiation, the Portland Police Association formally approved the terms and conditions by which the public safety support specialists, otherwise known as PS3s, would be included in the PPA. That includes specifics about the program, such as scope of work, training, and wages. Now, commissioners, it's our turn. With the approval of this agreement, we're clearing the way for the program to begin in earnest, starting with the posting of the PS3 position and recruitment. But first, I want to make sure that the community understands what the position is and what it is not. Fundamentally, PS3s will assist the Portland Police Bureau in responding to non-emergency calls that do not require police authority, which means that they'll spend a large portion of their time in the street in their own specially marked vehicles. They will not be behind the wheel of a PPB patrol vehicle. In June, when this position was approved, I listed some of the duties our PS3s will undertake. Those duties have not changed. PS3s will write police reports for non-emergency situations that do not require police authority, such as vehicle break-ins with no suspect information, bike thefts, burglaries with no suspect information, and the like. They will respond in the community to non-injury traffic collisions, also making themselves available to pedestrians, bicyclists, and other community members who are in need of assistance. They will be in the community conducting follow-up on property crimes where there is no specific suspect information, placing an emphasis, of course, on victims' rights. They'll assist officers in searching for missing persons, such as elderly adults, vulnerable adults, and children. They will go on walking patrols. They'll attend your neighborhood meetings and other community events, and they'll generally serve as ambassadors of goodwill for the Bureau in the community. This list is not exhaustive, but it's just a snapshot of the kinds of things the PS3s will be detailed to do. There's quite a bit of work currently performed by sworn members that does not require police authority. The work I just mentioned are a few examples. It takes about 18 months for a sworn officer to go through their certification and their training process. Not every single call requires a sworn officer with certification and training and a firearm to be deployed. There are many situations, including the ones I just described, where PS3s could be deployed instead. To hire PS3s means that we increase the bandwidth of officers who are sworn, who are trained, who are certified to engage with the community. We give our officers through this program the time to do more than run from call to call to call. It's a better allocation of our scarce resources. Public safety support specialists will be non-sworn Bureau personnel. They will not be police officers. They will not carry firearms. They will not have the authority to make arrests. They will not be able to detain community members. We've confirmed with the state that they do not need to be certified by a DPSST because they don't meet the Oregon definition of a police officer. Police officers have the authority and the responsibility for enforcing criminal laws. PS3s unequivocally will not have this same authority. This program has been set up to maximize seamless integration into both the Portland Police Bureau and the community. Rather than having a siloed unit the 12 PS3s will be decentralized and distributed amongst the three precincts. Like officers, they'll report directly to sergeants, but their work will be substantially different. This is not a community engagement or community policing unit per se. As Chief Outlaws expressed repeatedly, the work is not something that should be performed by a single detached unit, but rather community policing is a philosophy that has to be embodied throughout the organization from training to policy to hiring. As such, PS3s will be deployed throughout the Bureau and not serve as a standalone, isolated unit. PS3s will unequivocally not be manning front desk for our precincts, as some have suggested. There are already people in place who do that work and a union that protects their ability to conduct that work. To be clear, we agreed with PPA leadership on this point. Council has agreed as well. Prior to the unanimous vote to approve the creation of the position, council office is engaged in a conversation about the scope of the work for PS3s. My office met with commissioner offices in order to provide the class specification and answer any lingering questions. There was a lot of energy and excitement around the program, and that remains true to this day. Nothing about the program has changed since June. Many of my remarks today repeat what has already been said in these chambers, outside of City Hall, and in private conversations. What I'm asking the council to do today is to approve one more needed step in this process. Council's action would formally include PS3s in the PPA, something that was promised by my predecessor and two of my colleagues when the PPA contract was renegotiated and passed in 2016. With this step, the city will be able to fulfill a long-held promise to the community and begin the process of recruiting PS3s. I'll echo Commissioner Fritz's previously expressed sentiments to say that we need PS3s out on the streets as soon as possible in order to assist Portlanders. I hope to expand the number of PS3s within PPB well beyond the initial 12 personnel. As Commissioner Udaly and I have both noted, officer presence is not needed for every call. We're overloading our officers with work that could be delegated to non-sworn staff. We don't have to. It's a waste of limited resources. The expansion of this program, as its efficacy is assessed through data, will help lead the Bureau to a stronger community policing model. I'd like to give my colleagues the opportunity to ask questions about the program. For that, I've asked to be present Nicole Grant, my senior policy advisor, who has worked on this program for many, many months, Captain Erica Hurley of the Portland Police Bureau Training Division, Mark Amberg, who is the deputy city attorney, and Jarell Gaddis, who's the labor relations manager, and I see Deputy Chief Robert Day is also with us. I don't know if you want to participate, but you're certainly invited to do so.
Just here for decoration, sir.
Good. We'll have you up at the mic then. Welcome. Thank you for coming on up. And if my colleagues have further questions, this would be a good time to answer it. Nicole, if you have anything to add that I neglected to add, please feel free to do so. And as you speak, if you speak, could you please state your name for the record?
So, Commissioners, I'm Nicole Grant, Senior Policy Advisor to the Mayor. For the record, I just want to invite my colleagues up to answer any questions that you may have about the tentative agreement or the program specifically.
Well, I guess
Commissioner Saltzman.
I'm curious to know what kind of training will they have?
So this is Captain Erica Hurley with the Training Division. There's a six-week program that we're going to put them through, and so it's modified, obviously, some of the skills that an officer would need. They will not go through, but we do have the most of the classroom or much of the classroom that an officer will go through, So they will take implicit bias classes and procedural justice classes and those kinds of things as they go forward. We'll have a class that talks about what calls that they will take and how to handle those calls, report writing classes, of course, because they'll need to know how to write the reports for the things we're asking them to do. They'll have a driving course because they have vehicles that they do need to drive throughout the city, as well as some just basic safety issues for themselves as well as for traffic. We're asking them to do things like traffic control and those kinds of things. Those are learned skills, and so they'll have a class on that. They will also be CIT certified.
And we're doing the Portland Police Bureau is doing the training.
That's correct. Right? It's okay. A 6-week course at the training division of the Portland Police Bureau.
Thanks.
I have a question.
Commissioner Fish.
Can someone explain to me why, after the bargaining that occurred, there seems to be this conflicting vision between the police union president and the mayor's office about what the actual role of these PS3s will be going forward? How do we reconcile that, since presumably we've been bargaining over the very issue that now seems to be in dispute?
I'll answer that, Commissioner Fritz, or Fish, excuse me, I apologize. I actually don't understand Daryl Turner's position on specifically whether PS3s will be manning the front desk precincts. That issue was settled late last year by BHR. We made sure to kind of carve out duties that would absolutely not have any overlap with positions that are protected or within AFSCME. And so that quote caught us by surprise and is factually untrue.
Well, but it's a what we're talking about prior to the action that you're asking us to vote on today. What it illustrates to me is a bit of a disconnect between our the vision of our labor partner and the vision of the city in terms of what these positions will be, what our expectations are going forward. So, are we setting ourselves up for endless disputes and grievances with PPA over exactly what is the job description, or do you feel confident that we've ironed out in the negotiations what the scope of authority is consistent with the mayor's opening statement?
I feel that we have. Our discussions with the PPA, and Jarell and Mark, please feel free to chime in, were fairly kind of clear. And we have very clear documentation as well that lays out the job duties. You all were provided with copies of the class specification in June. That is what we agreed to. And so there, nowhere in those documents does it say that they will be engaging in front desk or administrative or clerk work, excuse me. So I'm not concerned about there being future conflict with the PPA. Again, don't understand where that language came from. And when our discussions with the PPA concluded, we were all absolutely on the same page.
Jarell, do you want to add anything to that?
That's accurate. We were at the table for a long time, and at no time did administrative duties come into the conversation.
And to be clear, if that had been part of the conversation, we would be at risk of violating the recognition clause that we currently have with AFSCME for the positions that they represent within the police union. Is that within the police bureau? Is that correct?
That is correct. And to furthermore, we met with AFSCME and PCL and went over this exact spec to make sure it wasn't violating any of their current job descriptions, that it wasn't mirrored. So we involved the unions as well. That was brought to our attention by Commissioner Fritz had asked for us to engage with Portland City Laborers and AFSCME when we were creating the job spec. So we made sure that it was explicitly not having anything to do with the body of work that AFSCME and Portland City Laborers currently do.
Okay, thank you.
Commissioner Fritz.
Thank you, Mayor. And thank you, Mayor, for continually briefing me about this over many, many months. So one of my questions, Nicole, you work for Mayor Hales and were part of getting the contract. There's been some comments in the press about this being rushed through before Commissioner Hardesty gets here, which I find extraordinary considering it's 2 years since the contract went through. Why has it taken so long?
negotiations with the PPA are long and belabored. We have been in conversations with them since late last year, but the conversation around CSOs, now PS3, began in 2016, likely actually even before then. The contract itself was ratified in October 2016. And so with that, the language in the tentative agreement specifically addresses CSOs, now PS3s, being included in the PPA bargaining unit and the city and PPA engaging in discussions over the feasibility of a program. Those discussions began in earnest with the advent of Mayor Wheeler's administration. And I don't quite recall when in 2017 they began, but it was later in the year. And we've had ongoing conversations about the scope of work, training, et cetera, the uniform, whether they would carry firearms. That conversation had to be internal initially, so among city stakeholders. And then we had several meetings with the PPA over time to get to the June council hearing where the classification was finally approved. And then with that, formal bargaining began, and this is more Jarrell's wheelhouse, but they began in late July as opposed to soon after the June council date, due to scheduling conflicts on the part of PPA representatives. And so here we are today after a 30-day ratification period with PPA. And so there have been, points at which this has been protracted because of, I think, the mechanics of this process. And
say no more.
Delays on, yeah. Thank you.
It's because that you have summarized my impression, which is that this was not what I went through a lot of trouble to bargain for in 2016. And so I will keep that in mind in the upcoming contract negotiations, and I'm sure all of us will. You mentioned uniforms. Where did you come down in terms of what these staff will be wearing?
Green polos or jackets and tan pants with like a patch that basically has the PPB logo.
It's kind of a cross between Parks Rangers and something else.
Yeah, I think so.
Okay, thank you.
Mayor.
Commissioner Udaly.
Thank you. So we will be hiring 12 PS3s, is that correct? I wasn't here in 2016, so I don't know how that number was arrived at, but I'm wondering if anyone has an opinion on whether that's an adequate number and can tell me how those PS3s will be distributed across the precincts.
I can speak to the first question, and I'll have Captain Hurley address kind of the distribution. I actually reviewed the June council hearing in preparation for this one, and Commissioner Saltzman, you asked the same question then. There was no kind of magic number with 12. It was simply a resource issue with, how much money could be allocated for the program, the idea being that after data is collected, that an expansion of the program would be kind of assessed or reassessed.
Great.
Captain Hurley. So you asked the question about how we're going to allocate. So they'll go to the precincts. There's three precincts, and we'll divide them most likely evenly through, but we actually are in the process right now with our Strategic Services Division pulling numbers, and we may end up actually with an additional one at East, which is busier than, say, North, which may not be as busier. Those are decisions that will come with the data as to when or where they are most needed, and then they will be divided in the busiest times of the day, right? So we'll have a couple of shifts, probably not a midnight shift, as usually the calls that they would be taking won't be coming in at 2 or 3 in the morning. But all of that will be based on police data of when those calls that are appropriate for them to take are coming in.
So you kind of led into my next question about data. I mean, we have existing data on the levels of priorities of calls, right? And we must have some sense of how many of these calls would be appropriate for a PS3 versus a sworn and armed officer. So I realize that we need to collect data after the initiative begins, but I am also curious if there's any kind of estimation on the impact on the workload of the officers once this work is delegated to the PS3s.
So those numbers we are looking at, one of the problems that we came across when we started looking at this data is the way that we classify things. So initially going into it, in my thought process, I'm looking at a priority 7, which is our lower priority calls for BOEC, and thinking those would be appropriate for PS3s. But after looking for how we prioritize things, that's really more about when or how quickly we expect someone to respond to the call. If it is a missing persons call, that's a very high priority for us, right? But that's still something that's appropriate for a PS3 to help with. Unfortunately, the way we pull our data in and put it in the system right now with priorities is difficult for us to just pull a number. We have this number, many priority 6s, right? So what we've done is we've sat down and gone through all of the priorities and kind of determined what of those types of calls would be appropriate for a PS3. And SSD is working on those numbers for us to determine, okay, this is a welfare check, but it's a welfare check that's not appropriate for a PS3, or it's a welfare check of an elderly person that is appropriate for that. And so, unfortunately, data isn't always brought in the way we need it to be. And so they're working on those numbers because we couldn't do it based on priority like we thought we might be able to. But we are working on that, and those numbers will come out.
Okay. Well, I'm going to be very curious moving forward, because really my greatest hope with the PS3s is that in delegating work to the PS3s, we can get a clearer picture of adequate staffing for actual sworn armed police officers, which is something that I don't feel like we've ever really arrived at. Is there a set plan for reporting back on the outcomes of this initiative that will be presented to council and available to the public?
We will do whatever you ask of us.
Yes. I'll be asking for that later. Okay. You talked to other unions to ensure we weren't infringing on their territory, but were any other unions considered for representation of the PS3s?
No other union was considered, since it first established a part of PPA. But we wanted to include them to make sure that the job functions are not blurring the lines in regards to the work that they do. So that was really important to us.
Okay. And then my final question is, I see in the minimum qualifications required 2 years of work experience. I guess presumably that's any kind of work experience, but it does say, which could include 2 years of military service or 4 years of reserve military service. Will there be any additional weight given to applicants who have military service in the hiring process?
Mark Amberg with the City Attorney's Office, Commissioner. I think the only preference would be under the Veterans Preference Law, which applies to any applicants. They would be given preference in accordance with the Veterans Preference Law.
Yeah. I mean, I certainly support developing job opportunities for veterans, but I think in this instance, I wouldn't want to see an emphasis on military service, given the concerns in the community about the increasing militarization of our police force and the intent of these positions to kind of build better relations with community members. Thank you.
Commissioner Fritz.
Captain, thank you for those questions. Commissioner Daly, you reminded me, you mentioned that they might be doing welfare checks on non-forceful entry, or what kinds of de-escalation training and crisis intervention training for people particularly experiencing mental or medical illnesses will these people get?
So we included the 40-hour CIT training, so they will be CIT trained before they leave the 6 weeks academy, so that's a piece of it. We have specific classes about some of the medical understanding that we give to Advanced Academy. Those will be done. That's only a couple hour classes, but the 40-hour CIT class will be specific for that.
Yeah, if you, in your next report, do some analysis on whether the 6 weeks training is adequate enough, and in particular whether just 1 week of crisis intervention training and an hour or two of medical training is, mm-hmm. is going to be sufficient.
You'd like me to do an analysis to determine that?
Yes,
we can get you the exact hours.
Points of evaluations of, is that enough to prepare these people to go out and do the kinds of things that we're going to be asking them to do?
So looking at it and based on what we already give for a law enforcement, at this point in time, yes, I think it is. Again, 40 hours of CIT training is what we give our Advanced Academy students. So our officers that are headed out get a 40-hour class, so they're going to get that training. Now, at 16 weeks in the Academy and stuff, of course, they get more of that training. Our expectation for a PS3 is if they end up on some of these calls that are escalating to that level, our expectation is that they will call law enforcement to come in and help.
But what's about medical training? How much medical training will they get?
They're going to have basics first aid classes, so they will have that, and they'll have some of our evaluation classes. But again, if it's rising to that level, they will have the understanding that the training for them will be to call medical or call to a law enforcement in order to intervene.
Right. That's my concern, is if they're checking on an elderly person who may be having some medical problems, obviously they're not going to diagnose and treat those problems,
no.
But they need to at least to be recognizing that they need to call and that.
Yes.
Might.
So I guess
so
that
that's
would be
what I'd like you to consider in your training mm-hmm. evaluation.
Uh-huh.
Do they need more?
Yeah, absolutely.
Thank you.
Mayor.
Commissioner Fish.
So I'm curious, what other cities have programs like this that you've determined are successful and that we're modeling after?
I didn't go through that part. That was the Bureau.
So Portland's actually a little behind the curve on this. And Eugene has a program. I believe Ben does. San Jose, California. Lake Oswego does. And they're all kind of very successful. Gresham as well. And they're all very successful. And, you know, the challenge really has been for some of these programs in integrating CSOs in many of the jurisdictions, but they all have different names, honestly, into their agencies. There has been a concern with mission creep, for example, and so I think we've done a really good job with, you know, in working with PPA and carving out duties to identify responsibilities for our PS3s that would not make mission creep an issue. And so this was kind of ratified with an overwhelmingly positive response among the PPA membership, and so, you know, I think our Bureau members are looking forward to the inclusion of this program. Just they will have less administrative work to do in that regard. So, you know, one of the other duties that PS3s can take care of, for example, is writing police reports. And so a lot of the time that our officers spend responding to non-emergency calls will be kind of passed on or delegated to PS3s. And I think with that, we'll see kind of a successful program here because this is helping our officers do their job and is also improving kind of community trust.
Thank you.
One
Commissioner Daly.
So CIT crisis intervention training, is that?
Yes, that's correct.
Okay, just wanted to clarify. My last question is really just wanting to give the panel an opportunity to clarify a point of confusion in the public, and that's that these positions were meant to interact with or aid people in the midst of a mental health crisis. It's my understanding that that was not the original intent, and perhaps my colleagues who were here when it passed could speak to that.
Yes, that's correct.
Yeah, okay. And they, in fact, won't be.
They won't be.
Yeah.
We're not looking for that.
To clarify, the crisis intervention training is for them to identify so that they understand what to do, not for them to actually be the ones that give care or do that. That's not the point. The CIT is for them to have an understanding.
Great. That's what I thought, but it's one of those things that's come up repeatedly.
Thanks for asking.
Yeah. Thanks for clarification.
Great. Thank you. How many people do we have signed up for public testimony, Sue?
We have 6 signed up.
Very good. Bring them on up. 3 minutes, name for the record. Please, when your time expires, that's when the red light comes on, please stop.
Will the first 3 come up? Dan Handelman, Philip Wolf, and John with Portland Resistance.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Mayor and Commissioners. I'm Dan Handelman with Portland Cop Watch. I'm going to try to skip through a lot of our testimony that we sent you by email because some things came up during this testimony that changed it, but not our opposition to your passing this today. The previous discussion in June was on the consent agenda. There was no public involvement. There was no public involvement in the discussion of what these officers are going to do. The contract specified they're going to be community service officers. They're now being called specialists. So these are Portland Police Bureau personnel who are not officers. They're going to be basically enhanced desk clerks with pepper spray. There's been no discussion about how they're going to be held accountable if they do put their hands on a civilian or if they use that pepper spray. I want to know more about what accountability mechanisms there are. It is also really shameful that after what happened in 2016, that this was put on the consent agenda before and put on with no real lead-up and no continued discussion before today, and with a paperwork that says that this is mostly internal for the city. These are community officers. I mean, you said that they're not community police officers. All officers are community police officers. So this is about community policing, community engaged policing. So the community wasn't engaged in defining what they're going to do. And the fact that there's still confusion with Daryl Turner and the PPA about what they're going to do, I think Commissioner Fish was on the right track. You're going to end up with disputes about what they're supposed to be doing or not. And I think it would be good for us to have that clearly defined. But I think we in the community were hoping that they'd be doing more, that we are seeing too much of the armed police officers showing up at protest actions and whatnot and escalating situations just by their presence. We were hoping to see unarmed officers. In England, as we know, most of the bobbies do not carry firearms. Instead, we're having only 12 out of 900 officers who are going to be technically unarmed, even though they're going to actually have pepper spray on them. And there's discussions about maybe giving them tasers. It was only today that we learned that these officers aren't specialists, are not going through DPSST. One of the things that was discussed in the press that they might do is gather security footage, and that's something I thought that the forensics unit did already, and I don't understand why you'd have new non-sworn officers doing that when you already have a forensics unit. So we're really urging you to delay approving the contract until the community gets more of what we need, some of the things that didn't come up in the previous contract. And specifically, the Citizen Review Committee is asking you to change their standard of review. And they were told by somebody in this building, you have to wait till the contract comes up in 2020. And here we are revising the contract in the middle of the four-year block. So it's clearly not fair to be making this change without discussing and opening up the rest of the contract and the things that caused all the disturbance and a great public outcry and the police shoving people down the stairs of this building and pepper spraying them out on the street. So I'm actually surprised there are not more people here today, but there was a very short turnaround, and we only learned this was coming up on the agenda on Friday. So I really urge you to answer some of these questions, specifically about the accountability issue.
Thank you. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. My name is John. I'm representing Portland's Resistance. Members of Council and Mayor Wheeler. Portland's Resistance calls for the Council to oppose this amendment to the police union contract. This unnecessary giveaway to the PPA, negotiated without transparency or community engagement and thinly veiled as an emergency, is a slap in the face to a city which has repeatedly voted for police reform. The 2016 contract was a disaster that keeps getting worse. Many of our members were involved in the community opposition surrounding the 2016 contract approval. At that time, it made no sense for Mayor Hales to rush through an agreement when Mayor-elect Wheeler had just won office in part by campaigning on police reform. With more than 6 months left on the contract, numerous individuals and organizations asked at that time, where's the fire? Why is this an emergency that needs to be rammed through despite community opposition and a lack of engagement in the process? At that time, the people of Portland were told that millions of dollars in 9% raises and other benefits for the PPA was a worthwhile investment because we were buying an end to the despised 48-hour rule and starting on community policing by having unarmed police respond to low-level calls. Well, as you know, the district attorney turned the 48-hour rule into something more like a 48-day rule. And now today, with scant community input and another agreement crafted in secret, the council is considering further concessions to the police union. Where are the people of Portland represented in today's decision? The people of Portland voted for police reform in 2016 and were denied a seat at the table. Organizations like the League of Women Voters, the ACLU, Don't Shoot, and NAACP, and the Albina Ministerial Alliance showed up to ask that the contract wait for the new mayor to take office. Mayor-elect Wheeler had campaigned in 2016 on actively demilitarizing the police, implementing mandatory body cams, and increased emphasis on de-escalation. Instead of delaying the contract adoption, community members were violently shoved and thrown out of the building to be gassed by the police force, so giddy about the contract that they adopted it with a record approval of 95%. The city did not drive a hard bargain in 2016, and the proposal before you today weakens the contract further. Now in 2018, the people of Portland historically elected the first African-American woman to serve on our council. A community activist, experienced policymaker, and outspoken police reform advocate, Commissioner-elect Hardesty's experiences and perspectives would be extremely valuable in this conversation. So why is today's proposal an emergency that can't wait another 6 weeks? The people of Portland have spoken and said that we want police reform with more transparency and accountability to the community. This proposal provides neither.
Thank you. Sue, can you scroll it? Is that possible? Oh, there it goes. It's doing it on its own.
Thank you, Philip.
Thank you. Next three, please.
Next three, please. Peggy Zabrowski, Joe Walsh, and Maggie.
Can we bring the screen up again?
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Hi, I'm Peggy Zabrowski. I'm a citizen. And you all know what the community wants, or at least a large portion of the community, which is an unarmed police force. There are successful unarmed police forces in United Kingdom, Ireland, Norway, Iceland, and New Zealand, all of which countries have a far, far lower rate of murder than in the U.S., killing of one human by another. In Oregon, 27 officers have lost their lives, sadly. 27 officers since 1878. In Oregon this year, 33 citizens have died at the hands of police. I am totally in favor of unarmed police officers. But I think if we put the officers in the way it's being described here, they become a poorly regarded adjunct to the regular police and not respected. I don't think that the described duties allow them the possibility of going into situations where we've previously seen citizens lose their lives and resolving them. I don't think this is answering our desire for police reform. Although I laud the intention, I don't think we'll get there this way, and that I wish you would look over this proposal and change it so that unarmed police officers are officers and have a leading role in our police force. I'm not comfortable having people with guns sitting behind me here. It's not comfortable, and we don't need it. There are situations in which people hurt other people and need to be shot, and you can have a special force that does that. But what we see at protests and in the community, especially in poor communities, especially in communities of color, is police escalation of situations. And so we really need to totally restructure. And that's all I have to say.
Thank you.
Good afternoon. My name is Joe Walsh, and I represent Individuals for Justice. There are so many loose ends on this. It feels like a dirty, filthy mop. That's what it feels like. You're going to take 12 people in the beginning, and you're going to disarm them, and you're going to send them in the community, I presume in uniform. I am not a big fan of the police department. Really not. I think most people know that. But I don't want somebody going up to somebody's door, knocking on the door, and getting blown away. And the person that's with them may get blown away because he doesn't have a gun. The whole setup is stupid. How stupid? I mean, are you guys trying to outdo Trump? That's how stupid this is. Why don't you give it to social services? Why don't you give it to the people on the street that know what's going on? Why do you give it to the cops, for God's sakes? The worst thing in the world is for a cop to come up to somebody and got a gun on his hip or doesn't have a gun on his hip, has mace. What is the matter with you? You know, we come here over and over and over and beg you not to do this crap, and then you get into trouble, and then we come back and we say, we told you. We're now trying to get out of the JTTF, and we told you over and over again, don't join it. But you wouldn't listen. And now you got really nice people coming, Dan Haldeman, logically presenting really good arguments to you. And what do? You sit there and you put it under an emergency, which means all five of you have to vote on this. Not one of you sitting there today says, what could go wrong here? Well, let me tell you, a whole bunch can go wrong. And we will nail you to the wall when it does. Because these guys, or women, are going to get the shit details. That's what they're going to get. They're going to get the details the cops don't want to do. And it's going to be a waste of money. It's going to be a waste of time. And I can't believe my buzzer has not gone off. It must be afternoon because I'm tired. But I'm tired of coming here time after time and telling you you're going to fall off the cliff, and you do, and then you get all upset when it hurts. Or you mumble when you leave meetings, Mayor.
Thank you. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Okay, there's a couple of things. One, regarding the protesters. Now, when you have disabled people who come down and protest, who are in wheelchairs or walkers, or say they can't hear, or say they have difficulty verbalizing, and then you tear gas those people, or say they can't walk, like, you know, physically, I would not be able to run away from a police officer. I'm that bad off. So I worry about disabled people being tear gassed who are not being violent. Like if I were to go down and sit down and protest somewhere with a sign, I would worry, you know, about being pepper sprayed by an officer. I'm torn because I'm pro gun control, but we're armed to the teeth in this country. So both these people said are true. One is, an unarmed officer could go up to a door and get blown away. And the other is, I've had people tell me that they feel safer in England because of the unarmed cops. Another issue is we've got two disabled women, one who didn't end up going to jail because she moved, who were kicked out of Director's Park. One was in a wheelchair, and she was kicked out of Salvation Army because she went to a hotel, and then she tried to get back in, and she only got so many nights and was kicked out, and she ended up in Director's Park, and the cops came and kicked her out, and she left. But then there's another woman who I don't want to describe her too specifically because that would break her, you know, privacy. But she's nonverbal in terms of being able to make sense, but she screams and she goes through the public garbage. And the thing is, she was in Director's Park and she was screaming. And so the unarmed park ranger called the police, and the police came and they arrested her. And the thing is I gave this woman a bag of chips and we attempted to have some conversation, and she's not able to communicate verbally in a way that you and I would understand, but we were able to use hand signals, and I was able to get sort of the gist of her intention. And I worry about disabled people ending up in jail who are not able to communicate their intentions and ending up like maybe Sandra Bland, or you know, being physically at risk of dying or grave injury because they're not able to communicate with officers.
Okay, appreciate it.
So.
And one more testifier, and that's Mary Sipe.
Very good. Thank you.
Well, Mary, we haven't seen you in a while.
I know. I've had some other commitments that have kept me away, and I've missed you all. But I saw you Monday night. So my name's Mary Sipe, and before I say what I want to say, I want to throw out two questions that other people might have. Are park rangers sworn officers, and are they under the PPA?
No.
Okay. And then also a question that came to my mind is, how does this training compare to the other programs that were mentioned, like in Eugene and Gresham and Lake Oswego? Might be interesting to take a look at that. I just have to say, you know, when I come here and I testify, I try to make informed decisions, and I try to do my research and understand, and today I'm a little bit confused. When I read this, it seemed very clear to me that this was pretty simple. Back in June, the decision about the public safety specialist was made. All of that's been done, and what we're looking at today is simply putting them under the PPA collective bargaining agreement. It seemed pretty clear and cut and dry. But then I have to say I was a little disappointed in that, you know, I read all 44 pages of this backup material and printed it and highlighted it and kind of understood it. And a lot of questions that were asked and a lot of comments that have been made today just kind of made it appear that not everybody has done as much research as I've done and understanding, and because there were a lot of questions that were asked that are right here in the materials. And I just, you know, kind of want to make sure that maybe we shouldn't be kind of slowing this down and taking a look at it and making sure that it's very clear what the duties, you know, of these unsworn officers are going to be, and that there isn't some conflict and some problems. I think Dan brought up some good points, and so I'm kind of like on the fence. I think I support putting this under, I think, the collective bargaining agreement. When I go through all this material, it seems appropriate to me. But then when all these other questions come up, I'm kind of like, well, you know, did this really go through due process, and are we really clear about everything, and is this job description and this training, is everything set in stone, or do we need to kind of talk about this a little bit more? So,
very good. Thank you. So why don't we bring the team back up, please? That, by the way, Sue, that was the list, correct? A public testimony. Very good. The list is closed. Why don't we bring the team back? I'm going to answer a couple of these questions, and I appreciate you, Mary, sort of teeing me up for what is actually in the material. So first of all, this is us going back to the memorandum of understanding, which is provided in the documents that have been provided to the public. And the very first exhibit, Exhibit A, which is referred to in the actual text of the agreement. The agreement is one page. On the back of the agreement, it is signed by representatives of the city, the police chief, Daryl Turner, who is the PPA president. It refers under the third item on the agreement. It says public safety support specialist classification specification is attached as Exhibit A. Exhibit A actually lists all of the specific functions, and I'm going to read the entirety of it because I only gave you a subset of it. Write police reports for non-emergency situations that do not require police officer authority and do not involve potential evidence, suspects, or a crime scene. 2, respond to non-injury traffic collisions and facilitate information exchange between involved parties. Coordinate tow services for disabled vehicles. 3, conduct follow-up on property crimes where there is no specific suspect information, either by phone or in person, with an emphasis on crimes, victims' rights, and referrals to other cities' bureaus as necessary. 4, process evidence or property, including writing reports and properly securing property. 5, attending neighborhood meetings, community, and or public events. This does not replace attendance at such events by sworn officers, and that is an important in paren. 6, assist police officers in searching for missing persons, such as elderly adults, medically fragile adults, or children when there is no reason to believe that they're a threat to themselves or the community. 7, assist with inventory and maintenance of PPB-issued equipment, excluding weapons and ammunition. 8, assist drivers, installed vehicles, and summon other necessary assistance, respond to pedestrians, bicyclists, and other community members in need of assistance. 9, broadcast and receive messages via police radio and mobile data terminal, maintain contact with field units, ask for assistance when appropriate due to incident type and scope. 10, assist with temporary street closures, detours, and other public service duties identified by police supervisors. 11, summon a police officer for situations they encounter in which enforcement action is necessary. And then it goes on to do more description. In the same document, the question around accountability came up. PS3s are subject, and the officer will correct me, but Officer Hurley, PS3s are subject to all directives, the same as any police officer in the Bureau, and they go through internal affairs for accountability issues, the same as police officers. I could not answer the question about how training compares in, say, Eugene. I don't have that level of specificity. I don't know if Officer Hurley or Nick, if you... I'm Captain. I apologize, of course. Okay. Sorry about that. I apologize.
No worries at all. We created our training based on those job descriptions you just did. Our job descriptions are not the same exactly as those other areas, and so we looked specifically at what you wanted them to do, and we created a six-week course to answer to that. So I don't know exactly what others train.
So is it also a fair statement? You know, the question came up, why the number 12? And there were two reasons in my mind why the number 12. Number one, 12 is what we could afford in the budget cycle, given that we are also making a significant ask for sworn, trained, certified officers. But I also didn't want a large program rolling out. I wanted a small, effectively a pilot program, so we could find out what was working and where the glitches are. I think we all acknowledge with the new program being stood up, there will be glitches. And therefore, I wanted to be able to evaluate with a smaller group of people what was working, what wasn't working, how we needed to refine the training or the support systems or the protocols. So I wanted to get that on the record as well. Anything else?
I have a few
Commissioner
questions.
Daly, thank you. Bet. You. Thank you.
So it's this initiative, I think, originally was called for by the community. Community advocates wanted community service officers and community policing. Today it feels like the goalposts are moving. I don't know if that's due to a lack of consensus within the community or a failure on our part to be clear about the intent and the process that we've gone through. So I have a few more questions to clarify some of that. Other than the name, what substantive changes have been made to the PS3 initiative between the time it was established 2 years ago in the contract and today?
I wasn't involved in the contract negotiations, so I can't speak to, as Commissioner Fritz can, for example, to what specifically kind of was laid out then or whatever the expectations were. My understanding from the very beginning, as far as my involvement is concerned, was that this was, you know, part of the Bureau's community policing effort and that we did not want desk clerks. We didn't want any paper pushers, so to speak. There really was a desire to have them out in the community serving as non-police first responders in non-emergency situations, and that has been consistent.
What concessions, if any, were made to the PPA? I mean, this did take a long time to work out, but it's been suggested we made concessions. Would you agree with that characterization?
No, I wouldn't agree with that characterization. We didn't make any concessions.
Okay. And it doesn't seem like Mr. Turner is really helping with the confusion on the matter. What kind of public engagement and involvement was undertaken in the last 2 years?
I think just kind of offline conversations, honestly. I mean, outside of council hearings and, again, the offline conversations, I wouldn't say that there have been any community forums, for example, on like this specific issue, and so we absolutely could have engaged kind of the public better around this, especially given that, you know.
Nick, I have to interrupt you here. I profoundly disagree. I ran on this platform. I ran on this. I probably presented this 150 times at forums all throughout this community. And what I said was that at the time we were calling them community service officers. I guess if there's any concession we made, it was in the naming, calling them public safety support specialists, because they're the union was concerned that there would be a conflict between who is and who is not a police officer under the legal definition of a public safety officer in state statute.